Hello everyone, this is Ian bringing you the April edition of the Angus Talking Newspaper. Before introducing this month's recording, I would like to say sorry to those of you who had problems with last month's USB stick. We forgot to delete the previous month's edition from the USB before recording the new one. So, again, sorry to those of you who heard a repeat of old news instead of the new news you were expecting. We'll be careful that this doesn't happen in the future. As for this month, we would like to welcome a new volunteer, Jenny, who will be reading for the very first time, and she will be reading items chosen from the Angus County Press of the 27th of March. Then she's followed by two more familiar voices, Muriel reading from the paper of the 3rd of April, followed by Irene reading from that of the 10th of April. And as an extra, at the end, another familiar voice, Liz from East Kilbride, looks at the life of Dolly Parton. Most of us know about Dolly's success as a singer, but Liz tells us about how Dolly has used her wealth to improve the lives of many people with a focus on education and creating jobs through her Dollywood theme park. Liz also entertains us along the way by quoting some famous Dollyisms. As an extra, but only on the USB edition, there is an article, again from the Talking News Federation, where two people talk about how they have coped with sight loss by taking up new hobbies and interests, or adapting how they do old ones. There are also some suggestions about possible hobbies you might like to consider. I hope you enjoy this month's Talking Newspaper, and I finish, as always, with a reminder to please return the yellow pochette after reversing the address label, and to also include the USB stick, after you've listened to it, of course. And finally, I hope you're enjoying the good weather we're having, and hopefully we'll still be having by the time you receive this recording. And of course, have a very happy Easter. So goodbye till next time, and for now, here's our new reader, Jenny, to start us off.
Hello, this is Jenny, reading from the Angus County Press, Thursday, March the 27th, 2025. The front page headline is Factory Jobs Put at Risk. Iron brew maker AG Barr has announced plans to axe its Strathmore bottled water brand in a move that may lead to the closure of its Forfar factory. The company announced the proposed closure of the distribution site after revealing its annual results for the year ending January 25th, 2025. The proposed closure of West High Street premises will see 23 jobs subject to redundancy. It comes after the Cumbernauld-based drinks group, whose brands include Iron Brew, Rubicon, Boost and Funkin, reported a 15.8% increase in adjusted profit before tax to £58.5 million. AG Barr also stated its position of £63.9 million net cash in the bank. The company acquired the Strathmore Spring Water business for £15.5 million in 2006 from Constellation Brands of the US. At that time, the company had 80 staff. The number of employees has reduced since then, and following the COVID pandemic, 13 jobs were lost in August 2020, taking staff down to 18. A spokesman from the company said the move had been prompted by the brand's recent performance in the market. They said, "We have announced a proposal with our Strathmore Water colleagues in Forfar, which could see the closure of the site and 23 roles becoming redundant. The Strathmore brand has struggled to compete in recent years, and we believe we have now reached a point where the Forfar site is no longer sustainable." The spokesman added, "The proposals are subject to consultation, and we intend to fully support our employees through this period of change." New £25 million fund for play parks. Angus Council is set to receive funding to improve the county's play parks as part of a new £25 million project announced by the Scottish Government. All councils in Scotland will receive a share of the funding to improve the standard of existing play parks, helping to ensure children have access to safe environments to play and socialise in. Funding is supported by the Play Vision Statement and Action Plan for 2025-2030, which was published earlier this week. Announcing the scheme, First Minister John Swinney said, "Playing is key to a child's healthier development, and by enabling councils to invest in outdoor play parks, we will ensure families can access a safe, high-quality place to play within their communities. It is all part of my driving mission to eradicate child poverty. Other steps we are taking include investing £3 million to develop mitigations for the UK government's two-child benefits cap, £37 million to deliver the expansion of the free school meals programme, and putting more money in families' pockets through the Scottish Child Payment." Dougan will continue in his current Westminster role. Local MP Dave Dougan has said that he has no intention of standing for either of Angus's constituencies in the 2026 Scottish parliamentary elections. It follows both Angus South and Angus North and Mearns MSP's announcements that this term will be their last in Scotland's Parliament. The Angus and Perthshire Glens MP said he will instead throw his weight behind both Angus SNP candidates' campaigns once selected, together with John Swinney's campaign in the Perthshire North part of his constituency. Bank set to close doors. High Street Bank Santander is closing its Arbroath branch later this year as part of a programme of 95 closures across the UK. It means anyone wishing to conduct business in branch will have to travel to Dundee or Perth. The group has said, however, that it will be recruiting 95 new community bankers in the locations where it is shutting branches, and hopes to redeploy some of the affected workers into these jobs. The Spanish-owned banking giant said it was shutting the branches from June, whilst also cutting hours across 36 sites and switching 18 to be counter-free, in moves impacting on more than a third of its 444-strong network. In total, around 750 jobs are at risk of redundancy. The company will be left with 349 branches across the UK, which will include 290 full-service sites, as well as five so-called work cafes. The Arbroath branch will close on June the 17th. Arbroath MP Stephen Gethins said he has been in touch with the company to raise the closure. He said, "I have written to Santander to convey my dismay over this decision, have asked them to reflect on the decision and to meet me with me further to discuss this." Santander said the raft of changes are due to a rapid movement of customers choosing to do their banking digitally. It added digital transactions had increased by just under two-thirds since 2019, with a similar drop for transactions in branches. A Santander UK spokesman said, "As customer behaviour changes, we are ensuring that our branches remain fit for the future. Our new combination of full-service branches alongside work cafes, counter-free branches and reduced hours branches aims to provide the right balance between digital banking and face-to-face money management and guidance." Arrests after pickpocketing. Police cautioned, arrested and charged two females on Saturday in relation to a number of pickpocketing incidents in Arbroath and Dundee. A spokesman for Arbroath Community Policing Team welcomed the result and warned the public to remain vigilant while out and about. "We would urge everyone to remain vigilant and ensure that valuables are kept somewhere on your person where you are able to keep a close eye on them whilst out and about. Official ban at Kepti Pond. There's a lovely photograph of Kepti Pond. Fishing in Arbroath's Kepti Pond has been banned due to a threat to the habitat's wildlife. Angus Council is erecting no fishing signs at the pond, stating that it is now an offence to fish within its conservation area. And despite the signage stating that fishing will not be allowed without written permission, the council has emphasised that no one will be given the go-ahead. A spokesperson said, "To be absolutely clear, Angus Council will not give permission to anyone due to the danger that fishing at Kepti Pond presents to wildlife. Police Scotland has and will continue to take action. Anyone found to be fishing illegally is liable to be prosecuted and have their equipment seized under the terms of the Salmon and Freshwater Fisheries Act. Museums boast new shops for a new season. Angus Museums are set to open for a new season with visitors welcome from Tuesday, the April the 1st. And Arbroath Signal Tower Museum, Methven Museum and Art Gallery, and Montrose Museum and Art Gallery, which will be open 6 days a week, will feature newly refurbished gift shops. The brand new spaces offering a selection of unique and locally inspired items for visitors of all ages have been supported by Museums Galleries Scotland small grants funding. Angus Alive says the new products enhance the museum experience and provide visitors with an opportunity to take home an item which reminds them of their visit, from locally crafted artwork, artisan jewellery, books to museum exclusive merchandise and other one-of-a-kind items. MSPs praise for cider business. Angus South MSP Graham Day and Councillor Lloyd Melville visited Lost Orchard Cider near Muirhead to hear about the business's sustainability practices. They discussed with business owners Julie and Andrew Husband Lost Orchard Cider's dedication to transforming the cider industry by replanting the Lost Orchards of Scotland. Looking to reverse the process of importing apples, the business restores a much-loved traditional part of Scotland's heritage and countryside. Julie and Andrew planted the first orchards in 2012 as an experiment to discover which varieties of apples would grow best in the area, with the aim of making apple juice for local farm shops. However, over the years, this evolved until the Lost Orchards cider business began in 2017. The family have been farming at East Adamston since the 1940s and are partnered with Ribena, one of only four farms in Scotland supplying the brand. Having planted 5,000 trees since 2012, they aim to expand their group of planters and the number of trees planted. The firm has also managed to win gold with their pure apple cider at the prestigious International Apple Cider Awards. Survey on Path Network Upgrade. Angus Council is seeking the public's input into its continuing programme of improvement to its path network. The aim is to make walking, wheeling and cycling easier, with the focus now on National Cycle Network 1. The local authority is now looking to upgrade sections of paths in Montrose and Ferry Den. The route runs the length of Ferry Den, along South Esk Place, West Terrace, Ogilvy Terrace and Burnside Place. Consideration is also being given to the stretch along Wharf Street and Hill Street in Montrose. Club shares plans for green future. Scottish rugby legends Matt and Xander Fagerson visited one of their old stamping grounds recently when they visited Strathmore Rugby Club in Forfar. The brothers from Kirriemuir trained at the club throughout their formative years during off-seasons and injury rehabilitations and visited to celebrate its partnership with Scottish Gas and commitment to building a more sustainable future. They learned about the club's efforts to enhance its energy efficiency and spent time with members engaged with the community and even joined in for a few games. The visit is part of an initiative by Scottish Gas in partnership with Scottish Rugby, which aims to help grassroots rugby clubs across Scotland reduce their energy bills and carbon footprints, and ultimately work towards achieving net zero carbon emissions. In 2017, the club established a charitable trust with the aim of supporting community development, promoting inclusion and ensuring its future growth, for which Matt and Xander have served as ambassadors for nearly 8 years. Finance deal is agreed for expansion at Port. A new public-private agreement has been reached to help expand operations and attract new investment at the Montrose Port. A Scottish Enterprise grant of £3.2 million will support a £7.2 million project to acquire and develop land just under 2 miles from the port. With a new strategically important site, Montrose Port Industrial Park, the port will aim to offer both existing and new companies greater flexibility to grow and adapt alongside Scotland's thriving renewable sector, in which Montrose plays a key part. The Scottish Enterprise investment is part of the Scottish Government's commitment to invest up to £500 million over 5 years to develop the offshore wind supply chain and leverage an additional £1.5 billion of private investment. Montrose Port Authority, the world's largest chain and anchor port, is a key hub for transport, logistics and energy on Scotland's northeast coast. As a trust port, it drives sustainability, supports economic growth, and plays a vital role in Scotland's energy transition. A leading hub for renewable energy, the port has become a major operations and maintenance base for offshore wind, and is home to the operations and maintenance base for Scotland's largest offshore wind farm, Seagreen. It will also be a base for the forthcoming Inchcape Wind project, which will begin this year. Revealing the investors behind Canoustie Plan. Plans could see the world-famous Canoustie links run on a long-term lease until the 22nd century by an entity known as Canoustie Golf Heritage and Hospitality Group Limited, CGHH. The private firm has already struck a seven-figure deal to manage and operate the courses until 2033. It is now in talks with Angus Council, Canoustie's own owners, to strike an agreement that could run until 2123 as part of efforts to funnel investment into the site and secure the return of the open. While CGHH is a private limited company registered in London, those who hold a financial stake in it are drawn from around the world, with 18 shareholders in total. Chairman of Canoustie Community Council said he viewed the investors as successful, experienced entrepreneurs, adding, "We must hope they will be responsible stewards of the course, the main asset of the town." It is understood the existing golf and hotel management teams at Canoustie will continue to manage business operations day to day under CGHH. One group of long-standing season ticket holders at Canoustie has written to the council stating that there are legitimate questions to be answered about CGHH's plans. They added, "In general, private equity or hedge fund investors do not simply operate on an altruistic basis. The future consequences of the loss of control of Angus Council's jewel in the crown to a private equity investor presents risks that do not appear to have been fully risk assessed or had forensic cost benefit appraisal applied to them." Sport. Forfar Athletic has launched its Kids for a Quid ticket campaign in a bid to get more fans cheering them on in their fight against relegation. Athletic moved off the bottom of League Two once again on Saturday with a 1-0 win away to Stranraer. This was their third away win in a row, having previously beaten Elgin City and Stranraer for a second time earlier this month. Montrose winger Blair Lyons admits the collapse against Cove Rangers stayed with him all week. A first home win since November looked to be in the bag as Montrose led 2-0 with 2 minutes to go, but would end up drawing 2-2. However, that win would only be delayed 7 days as Annan Athletic were beaten 3-1 at Lynx Park on Saturday. Brechin City's return to the top of the Highland League table would last a mere 4 days. They followed up on their fine win with a 1-0 loss at Inform Inverurie Locos last week. Meanwhile, Brora were demolishing Keith 5-0 to once again take over at the top on goal difference. Montrose Rose Lee beat Cooper Angus 2-0 at Gill Park to make it 4 wins in a row in the Midlands League post-split fixtures. Dock Cars. It was a difficult night for the only 2 Angus drivers in action at Cowdenbeath Racewall on Saturday. Peter Watt from Kirriemuir and Brian Hogg Jr. Arbroath were both in the Formula 2s. In tricky conditions, the only classified finish either made was Hogg Jr. coming 7th in the second heat. This week in history. March the 27th, 1989, Bank Holiday Monday was the warmest for 37 years, with the Midlands hotter than the Costa Brava or the Canary Islands. March the 28th, 1964, the pirate station Radio Caroline began transmitting from a ship in the North Sea. March the 29th, 1981, was the first London Marathon. March the 30th, 1964, the seaside resort of Clacton was the scene of pitched battles by gangs of mods and rockers. March the 31st, 1939, Britain and France pledged to support Poland against any aggression from Hitler's Germany.
Hi, my name is Muriel and my reading from Angus County Press dated the 3rd of April. Angus Citizens Advice Bureau, CAB, has closed its Forfar and Montrose offices as part of a shake-up of its services in the county. The charity has blamed a lack of funding for this decision, but has said that a level of service will still be provided in both towns with community-based alternatives. Both offices closed on Tuesday, April the 1st, although the main office in Arbroath will remain open. A new home visit service will also be introduced during the summer, and advice will still be available via telephone, email and by face-to-face appointment. CAB said that the new community-based approach throughout the area will bring its coverage closer to people who need its services. Zoe Watson, Angus CAB manager, said, "Over the last few years, like all charities, we've seen our funding squeezed. We've taken the opportunity to think about how we can best use our resources. Maintaining 3 large offices is not really sustainable, and nor is it the best way to offer our service. We can better provide the advice people need by basing ourselves in more locations such as community hubs and trusts, as well as existing local organisations. I know that some people might feel disappointed that our old offices are closing, and I want to suggest that Angus CAB will still have a presence in both towns. We are just moving from those bases to a variety of different locations in these towns and throughout Angus. This means we will be operating closer to the communities that need us most." Miss Watson also said that the new service delivery will involve the same number of people as previously and with no reduction in operating hours. She continued, "We are moving from investing in buildings to investing in advice. Angus CAB will have the same number of staff and volunteers, and they'll be spread across most locations. We intend to offer the same number of hours of service as current, and of course our advice will remain free, impartial and independent. We hope that our larger footprint in Angus will bring more value into communities through opportunities to understand and get involved in our work, to volunteer with us or to see us working with other local and trusted organisations. We are also seeking new partnerships with anyone that would like to host the CAB in their premises for one day a week, and with organisations that feel we might work well together to deliver services and build resilience around our funding for the future. I'd like to thank all our wonderful staff and volunteers. We couldn't offer our service without them, and they will be central to our new delivery model. Angus CAB is all about the advisors who work here, and local people can be sure that they will remain the heart of our new model. Details of the new arrangements in Forfar, Montrose and beyond will be announced in due course. The Arbroath office at 11 Millgate, meanwhile, will now be open from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday to Friday, excluding Wednesday, for a walk-in service. Forfar's police station will move permanently to William Wallace House in the town later this year, Police Scotland has confirmed. Officers and staff had to move out of their West High Street premises last year due to health and safety concerns when the building was deemed to be unsafe for use. The decision follows a consultation process that ended in August last year. Police Scotland said that the situation arose due to long-term issues with the building, combined with the results of storm damage. A public consultation was open on a proposal to relocate the local policing team to alternative premises in the Forfar area and dispose of the West High Street headquarters. Since then, officers have been working from the half-empty Angus House, Angus Council's headquarters, which were also put up for sale last year. Superintendent Suzanne Smith said members of the public will be aware we had to close the station on Friday, September the 11th, 2024, as a precaution due to compliance concerns related to health and safety. Officers and staff were relocated to Angus House on a temporary basis as part of business continuity plans. Superintendent Smith said that the council-owned building will be refurbished over the next few months to create a modern and efficient working environment for officers while ensuring it meets the needs of the local community. The police station will be located on the first floor of William Wallace House with a public front counter that can be accessed through an intercom at the front entrance of the building. Investing in our estate supports our 2030 vision and the estate master plan, which outlines the need for a more effective and sustainable estate. This will enable modern policing and support the health, safety and well-being of our people and the communities we serve, and reduces long-term operating costs. Police Scotland is committed to maintaining a strong presence in Forfar. Officers will remain visible, accessible and responsive to local concerns. Front counter services will remain at Arbroath Police Station between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday to Friday, plus at West Bell Street in Dundee. For non-emergencies and general inquiries, call 101 and 999 if it's an emergency. A Forfar care home resident celebrated her 100th birthday in style after an appeal to the public attracted more than 250 cards from well-wishers. The team at Finavon Court issued the appeal a few days before Agnes McConnell Walker's milestone birthday, hoping to make the day as special as possible. More than 250 people across the country responded, and the postbag also included a special card from King Charles and Queen Camilla. Staff said that Agnes, better known as Nancy, is a much-loved resident at the home. But she was joined by more than 25 family members and friends, as well as fellow residents and staff, to celebrate. Several local businesses also handed in flowers and cards to mark the occasion. Nancy was born on March the 24th, 1925, in Coldburn, and has led an exciting life, full of love and joy. She was the middle child of three children, with an older brother Ben and younger brother Robert. She married Ernie Walker in October 1946, and they were married for 56 years. And one of their favourite activities was dancing together. Nancy and Ernest went on to have three children, two girls and a boy, followed by eight grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. In her younger years, Nancy owned her own laundry and cleaning business called Walker's Cleaners. She was also a childminder and playgroup organiser. Nancy moved into Finavon Court Care Home in August 2023. Nancy's favourite thing to do include enjoying caravan holidays, as well as going in her motorhome and spending time with her grandchildren. She said, "I've lived a long and fulfilling life, filled with lots of memories, happiness and joy. I'm grateful to everyone who has taken the time to pass on their birthday well wishes through sending me a birthday card. Thank you." Claire Cameron, Finavon Court Manager, said, "We're delighted to be celebrating an amazing lady as she reaches this astounding milestone. Nancy is such a character and popular amongst our residents. She's always keeping our colleagues and residents entertained with the stories she tells." An Angus-based project has received £5,000 to support the growth of community-led work for people living with dementia, their carers and family members. Our Growth Connections is one of 27 projects who have been awarded funding through the third year of Age Scotland's Dementia Encouraging and Supporting Grassroots Activity Fund. This year has seen the largest allocation to date, enabled by the Scottish Government, totalling £349,393, distributed throughout Scotland. The fund aims to address gaps in support for people living with dementia and carers, break down barriers to support and help people to live well within their communities. Alison Tonner, our Growth Connections Manager, said, "Our members are absolutely delighted that the funding will allow us to go on days out within the community. We have already started planning our trips. The members will be the decision makers and will help plan and organise things. We have a huge list of possibilities and are so excited. Thank you so much to Age Scotland for making this possible." Anna Clements, Head of Dementia at Age Scotland, added, "It's inspiring to see such a diverse range of projects receiving funding, which helps people living with dementia, their carers and families stay connected and supported in their communities. From towns and cities to islands and remote areas, these organisations play a vital role in empowering people to live well with dementia." A former serving Royal Marine from Arbroath is taking on an epic walk around Scotland's coast in aid of two good causes. Malcolm Davies started his fundraising walk from the town's Tesco store at the weekend. The 73-year-old, who served as a Royal Marine for 25 years, is expected to take several months to complete his challenge. The proceeds will be split between two organisations which are close to his heart, the Scottish charity Air Ambulance and Scottish Mountain Rescue. Malcolm is also an active member and fundraiser in the East of Scotland Royal Marines Association, and fellow members and their spouses were at Tesco to see him off on his journey. A few branch members from the association, including Chairman Dave Barton, escorted Malcolm and kept him company as far as Carnoustie. Brechin engineering firm Matrix International is facing closure with a question mark hanging over dozens of jobs at the site. Staff have been told their jobs at the East Mill Road factory are under threat following a decision by US-based owners Regal Rexnord Corporation to consider relocating operations elsewhere. The news comes 18 months after the site was submerged under 4 feet of water when Storm Babette struck the town in October 2023. In January 2024, Matrix staff were told manufacturing and parts and production was to cease, although assembly operations had continued. The company was established in 1939 by Harry Harley, the chairman of a Coventry engineering firm. The factory built naval gun turrets and electro-hydraulic mechanisms for anti-aircraft guns during the Second World War, and at the height of wartime production, the then Coventry Gauge and Tool employed around 1,000 staff, many of them were women. After the war, the business switched the production to commercial contracts. In 1959, Matrix began the production of power transmission products. The company then expanded its range to include brakes and couplings in the 60s, and by the end of the decade, the name had been changed to Matrix. The parent company emerged with Milwaukee-based electric motor and transmission components manufacturer Regal Rexnord Corporation. The company owners have been asked to comment on the Brechin situation. At the time of the 2024 announcement, there were thought to be around 100 Angus employees. It is not known exactly how many remain on the site following the workforce restructure. The news follows the loss of another established local business last year. More than 50 jobs were lost when blinds manufacturer Stephen Scotland closed its Denburnway factory in December after half a century of trading. The county was hit by another job blow last week when Iron Brew owner A.G. Barr announced its plans to axe its Strathmore Water brand, which could lead to the closure of the firm's plant at West High Street in Forfar with the loss of 23 jobs. A charity football match organised by Angus Tayside Young Farmers will kick off in Forfar next month in aid of brain tumour research. The highly anticipated past versus present charity football match will take place on Friday, May the 16th at Strathmore Park, home of Forfar West End. The match will get underway at 7 p.m. with a £5 entry fee. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting brain tumour research. The event promises an exciting showdown between former members and current young farmers in a bid to raise both awareness and funds for this vital cause. District Chairman Glenn Barclay said the match is important in terms of the club's continuity and for the cause for which it is raising funds. He said, "Our district has always had a strong tradition of talented footballers, and it's essential that we continue to nurture those connections between current members and those who have come before us. This match provides the perfect opportunity to do just that, while supporting brain tumour research, a cause that is particularly meaningful to many of our members at this time." Referring to the success of the 2023 charity match, he continued, "The last game set a high standard of play, and we're looking forward to another great evening this year. The opportunity to bring together past and present members for such a worthwhile cause is something we're all excited about, and we hope to continue making a real difference. The match will showcase friendly competition between past and present members of Angus Tayside Young Farmers, with all funds raised directly benefiting brain tumour research." Glenn added, "This charity match offers an excellent chance for the community to come together for a fun and meaningful evening, supporting a cause close to the hearts of many. Brain Tumour Research is the only national charity in the UK focused on finding a cure for all type of brain tumours. Through campaigning to increase the national investment in brain tumours research to £35 million per year, while fundraising to create a network of 7 sustainable brain tumour research centres of excellence across the country. Football match follows a fantastically successful festive tractor run organised by Forfar GAC, which raised £10,000, the biggest total in the event's history. The run itself was also the biggest so far, with a cavalcade of more than 200 decorated tractors and agricultural vehicles following a route between Kirry and Forfar on Christmas Eve. Enthusiastic crowds lined the streets in both towns and cash was raised on the night. A Just Giving appeal, which ran afterwards, raised a further £2,316, and local house builder Guild Homes donated £1,000. The event concluded at the Old Forfar Mart, hosted by A.M. Phillip, who allowed the venue to return to its agricultural roots for the last time. Afterwards, Chairman Robbie Wills praised the committee for organising the event and remarked that seeing the local communities come together on Christmas Eve to support charity was truly heartwarming. The recent release of Montrose FC's 145th anniversary top has led to Montrose Community Trust receiving a donation of £1,450 from the 4 shirt sponsors. The retro-inspired top has proven to be a big hit with fans and sponsors Montrose Port Authority, Intermoor, John Laurie Tubulars and Carnegie Fuels agreed to equally contribute towards the charity. Trust CEO Chris Platt said, "We are incredibly grateful to Montrose FC and our local businesses for their unwavering support, especially through the special edition kit celebrating 145 years of the club's history. This donation is more than just funding. It's a testament to the power of community, partnership and the deep-rooted connection between Montrose FC and the people it serves. Every contribution helps us continue making a real difference, and we couldn't do it without this kind of meaningful backing." There was joy on the pitch for Montrose too, as they won 3-2 away to Stenhouse Muir on Saturday the 29th of April. The visitors took the lead after 25 minutes when Owen Sturton's free kick was saved by Darren Jameson, but Callum Sandilands was on hand to score. 3 minutes later, it was Sturton's turn to find the net as he burst clear to finish after a through ball from Craig Whiten. Montrose then went 3-0 up on the stroke of half-time when Sandilands got on the end of a Blair Lyons cross. Stenhouse Muir came back in the second half with Blair Alston finding the net after 66 minutes and Matthew Aiken heading home 3 minutes from time. However, Montrose held on And next up host are Bros in the Derby on Saturday the 5th of April. Montrose women were on the wrong end of a 3-2 the next day as they visited Spartans in the SWPL. The visitors took the lead after 15 minutes when Sarah Cleland could only divert Jade McLaren's header into her own net. Montrose then doubled their lead on 25 minutes when a Demi Taylor corner was met by Sophia Martins. However, Cleland scored at the right end 4 minutes later and goals by Zara Andrews and Hannah Andrews after the break completed the comeback.
Hi, my name is Irene and I'm reading from the Angus County Press, dated Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Capitalise on anniversary. A lineal descendant of King Robert the Bruce has given his backing to proposals to mark historic milestones for Arbroath and Dunfermline in 2028 to deliver an economic boost to both areas. Both towns will have cause to celebrate when 2028 brings the 900th anniversary of Dunfermline Abbey and Arbroath toasts 850 years since King William the Lion founded the abbey in the town. The proposal was put forward at Sunday's Declaration Day event at Arbroath Abbey on Sunday, which marked the anniversary of the Declaration of Arbroath, signed there in 1320. Former Historic Environment Scotland Historic Monument Manager Jim Miller said both towns could work together to maximise the benefits. He said, "Key figures of Scotland's rich history are closely associated with Arbroath and Dunfermline. King William the Lion is buried in Arbroath, while St Margaret, Robert the Bruce and David I lie in Dunfermline. So much of Scotland's rich history is tied closely to the buildings, and showcasing their importance could introduce new generations to our incredible national story and deliver an economic boost through increased visitor numbers." And the proposals have been backed by Lord Charles Bruce, who highlighted the importance of both abbeys in the King's life. He said, "For King Robert the Bruce, among the most important places in Scotland that feature prominently throughout his life were the abbeys of Dunfermline and Arbroath. It was at Dunfermline where the lives of his Canmore ancestors were commemorated, where the children of his second wife, Elizabeth de Burgh, were born, where he planned to be buried and where his body would be venerated for posterity. And it was Arbroath which he so often visited to devote himself to the life and legacy of St Thomas Becket, and where Abbot Bernard, his chancellor and author of the 1320 Declaration, held sway for almost 20 years. Mid-Scotland and Fife MSP Murdo Fraser added, "Given the rise in interest in pilgrimage and ecclesiastical sites, there is a real opportunity to capitalise on these anniversaries for the benefit of local economies. It would be good to see public bodies working together to ensure they are properly marked and marketed." Opening of new centre. A new look visitor centre will welcome visitors to Nature Scots and Cyrus National Nature Reserve, NNR, which has been opened in time for the summer season. Staff were delighted this week to welcome Marie Goujon, MSP, to officially cut the red ribbon and open the revamped building. The overhaul has taken a year to complete, with fresh interpretation focusing on what makes St Cyrus NNR truly unique. The reserve is one of the most diverse in Britain, with the warming influence of the sea and shelter from the cliffs and dunes, creating a unique microclimate. The plants, birds and animals that live on the reserve do so in a landscape that shifts over time with the weather and tides. Ms Goujon, MSP for Angus North and Mearns constituency, said, "I am thrilled to see the newly revamped St Cyrus Visitor Centre open its doors to the public. St Cyrus is a spectacular location with rich biodiversity, and the new centre will help inspire even more people to explore, appreciate and protect this unique environment. Credit goes to Therese and the team in St Cyrus, as well as everyone who made this transformation possible. Over the past 3 years, they've been working really hard to improve the visitor experience at the reserve, including upgrading the car park and creating a new accessible toilet block. The revamped visitor centre will be a great new addition to help make the welcome even warmer for our visitors. The visitor centre building started life around the late 1860s as a lifeboat station. It only saw 20 years of active service and was no longer in use by the mid-1880s due to a storm altering the course of the River North Esk. Depot collects eggs for schools. Stagecoach East Scotland's Arbroath Depot has been encouraging staff to donate Easter eggs and contribute to its Easter fund, helping to provide Easter treats for local schools. This initiative is now in its fourth year, with around 500 eggs expected to be collected. Staff donate Easter eggs and raise funds through a football prize draw, ensuring that children who might not receive an Easter treat still get to enjoy something special. Any remaining eggs are donated to Antiquary Care Home near the depot, and any additional funds raised will be donated to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, Arbroath Lifeboat Charity. Driver Derek Miller organises some of the fundraising but also dresses up as the Easter Bunny when delivering the eggs. Deborah Doherty, Assistant Operations Manager, said, "I know that seeing the smiles on kids' faces when they get handed an Easter egg is always a highlight, especially when they're handed over by the Easter Bunny. Well done to Derek and the rest of Team Arbroath." Until Monday, April the 21st, Stagecoach is also offering customers the chance of winning free bus travel and some Easter goodies when the Great Scottish Easter Egg Hunt returns. Buses and coaches have Easter egg stickers hidden on select services where a QR code can be scanned for entry into a prize draw. There are three sets of prizes, each including a 28-day Mega Rider ticket and a hamper of Easter treats. Free prescriptions save families over £400 a year. Angus South MSP Graham Day has highlighted that the introduction of free prescriptions has saved the average Scottish household over £400 a year. His comments came on the 14th anniversary of the Scottish Government's introduction of the policy. Latest figures from the Scottish Parliament Information Centre show that over 113 million prescriptions, including 8,356,000 by NHS Tayside, were dispensed in Scotland in 2023-24, meaning that on average, people in Scotland receive 20.8 prescriptions. This means that based on the £9.90 charge currently in place in England, the average household in Scotland saved £436.72 in 2023-24. He pointed out that in one of his first acts as Scottish Conservative leader, Russell Findlay outlined his plans to reintroduce charges if he ever came to power, a move which would cost each person £206 per year on average. A report by Trussell Trust last year showed that in England, 68% of working households receiving universal credit have gone without essentials such as prescription medication due to the costs involved. Mr Day said, "The SNP believe that healthcare should be free at the point of use for everyone. The prescription charges, which Russell Findlay plans to reintroduce, were nothing more than a tax on ill health. People in Angus are still living through a cost of living crisis, making it more important than ever that they can access the medical treatment they need without worrying about the costs." unease over loss of land. The Scottish Government has admitted it has not made an assessment of the loss of agricultural land to pylons, despite fears that farmers will have to give up fields for a planned 70-mile power line development, the Scottish Conservatives have claimed. In the Scottish Parliament, North East MSP Tess White warned that farmers have serious concerns about the loss of prime agricultural land from SSEN's plans to build a chain of 190 feet pylons between Kintore and Teeling. At portfolio questions, she called on Agricultural Minister Jim Fairley to give more protection to the industry, which will be among the worst hit if the proposals go ahead. It comes after farmers staged a protest last April against the creation of the monstrous pylons between Aberdeenshire and Angus. In her question, Ms White said farmers, along with other stakeholders, have raised serious concerns about the loss of prime agricultural land because of the overhead lines. There are also worrying implications for the use of farming machinery, including autonomous tractors. Has the Scottish Government considered the loss of agricultural productivity as a result of SSEN's plans? And will it commit to protecting our food security and our farmers in the North East? In response, Mr Fairley said, the Scottish Government has not made such an assessment at a national or regional level. The Scottish Government holds multiple data sets relating to land use. However, they alone could not support an assessment of potential loss of agricultural land. Ms White said, this underlines that farmers are being ignored and are seen as an afterthought by both the SNP and SSEN throughout this planning process. Farmers are rightly concerned about the significant disruption to day-to-day farming operations resulting from these giant energy infrastructure projects. It's clear ministers have no understanding of the magnitude of this issue, which undermines their policy that food security is Scotland's national security. Drugs seized in Carnoustie. Police in Carnoustie seized a quantity of controlled substances during a raid on a house in the town on Friday. Officers from the Carnoustie Monifieth and the Sidlaws Community Policing Team, alongside Police Scotland's Operational Support Unit, recovered the drugs during the execution of a drug search warrant in an intelligence-led operation. Police say inquiries are ongoing. Constable Irvin said, we have successfully recovered a quantity of controlled drugs and I would like to thank the community for sharing their concerns with us. Today's operation was based on intelligence provided by the public and we rely on their continued support for these intelligence-led initiatives. I would like to reassure the local community that we are and will continue to be relentless in taking robust action against those who bring controlled drugs into our communities. Anyone with information about crime should call Police Scotland on 101. SEPA water warning. Angus businesses are being urged to take action to manage their water use and ensure their operations have climate resilience built in as early signs of water scarcity emerge across Scotland. The Scottish Environment Protection Agency's latest water situation update covers March, showing the month brought below average rainfall across most of the country. Some areas in the south saw less than a third of what they would usually expect, and parts of Angus and Fife have now seen 10 straight months of below average rainfall, receiving less than half of what is normal for March. The impact is already being seen. River flows are running low to extremely low for this time of year, and groundwater levels from SEPA's monitoring points are dipping further due to a lack of winter recharge. Groundwater levels are lower than levels recorded in early April 2022, particularly in Angus and Fife. That year later saw a summer drought, with restrictions put on abstractions from rivers in some areas. Despite Scotland's reputation as a wet country, climate trends are shifting. Extended dry periods are becoming more common, increasing the risk of water scarcity. SEPA's three-year corporate plan highlights climate resilience as a strategic priority for the agency, helping businesses and communities adapt to the impacts of climate change and build in resilience to extreme weather events. Roadshow to offer advice on resilience. Angus Council's Community Resilience Roadshow will be going around the county later this month to highlight the importance of being prepared for both individuals and communities. The roadshow is supported by Angus Rural Partnership with funding from the Scottish Government's Rural Community-Led Local Development Fund 2024-2025, part of the Scottish Rural Development Programme, as well as SSEN. Roadshow partners who will join Resilience, Roads and Community Officers include the Emergency Services, SSEN, Scottish Neighbourhood Watch, the Red Cross and the Met Office. There will also be a Hello from Flo each day, with the Scottish Flood Forum attending with Flo the Flood Bus. Active members of local resilience groups will be on hand to talk about vital work and planning they do at the heart of the community. They will provide a defibrillator demonstration and offer an insight into the benefits of portable generators and other essential equipment. Trading standards officers will attend to give information about current scams. Funding has been provided for a limited number of household grab bags that will be available free of charge at each show. A grab bag is an essential part of being prepared, and these contain items such as a power bank for mobile devices, a pen, notepad and torch. Advice on adding personal contents will also be available. ASDA has donated towards resilience boxes and one will be raffled off at each event. Councillor Mark MacDonald, the Council's Communities Convener, said this information tour builds upon our very worthwhile flooding advice roadshows and is really all about raising awareness about what we can all do in advance of significant incidents or serious events. Emergency responders will provide information about how they react and respond to emergency incidents. Crucially, they can also give guidance to groups and individuals about how they can plan for such eventualities and help themselves and potentially others. The roadshows are also a great opportunity to network with resilience partners, organisations and volunteers. A little preparedness before the fact can make all the difference in how well we are equipped to deal with unexpected or emergency incidents. We hope these roadshows will provide some valuable insight and advice about how to be as resilient as we all can be when the need arises. The roadshow runs for 4 days from Monday, April the 28th, and will be pulling in at the following. April 28th, Kirriemuir Fire Station, 65 Glengate, DD8 4JG, 2 till 7 p.m. April the 29th, Montrose Playhouse, The Mall, DD10 8NN, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. April the 30th, Arbroath Saltire Centre, 58 Montrose Road, DD11 5JN, 3 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. May the 1st, Brechin City FC, Glebe Park, DD9 6BG, 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Notably, the roadshow is visiting Angus Towns this time to emphasise that preparation and resilience is just as important for urban areas as it is for rural communities. Earnings limit increase for carers. More unpaid carers in Scotland could benefit from financial support as a key change in eligibility rules came into effect this week. The earnings limit for carer support payment has increased from £151 to £196 a week. This means that a carer can earn £45 more a week after tax, national insurance and certain expenses and be eligible for the payment. The change could mean carers already receiving carer support payment will be able to undertake more paid work and still receive the benefit. In addition, many carers earning a take-home pay of £10,192 or less a year who were previously unable to access the additional support could now be eligible. To receive the carer support payment of £83.30 a week, carers also need to be providing 35 hours or more of care a week to someone who receives a qualifying disability benefit. Carer support payment is replacing carer's allowance in Scotland, delivered by the UK Government's Department for Work and Pensions. Social Justice Secretary Shirley Ann Somerville said the Scottish Government proposed back in 2022 to raise the earnings limit for carer support payment once fully launched. This was on the back of strong feedback from carers and support organisations that the previous limit was set too low. The increase puts the earnings limit at a level which equates to 16 hours at the national living wage. Alongside other improvements we have made, this should help more carers to balance paid work with caring and provide more stable financial support. Grant support for school projects. Two Montrose organisations are the latest to have benefited from new community grants introduced by local architects Crawford Architecture. The firm has granted vital funds to New Solutions and Montrose Tennis Club, enabling them to continue their contributions to the community. Crawford Architecture announced their own awards last September in a bid to highlight local individuals and groups in the area who are making a significant contribution to the local community. The successful winner selected by the team receive a grant for up to £500. This time, they were inspired by the work of New Solutions, a community interest company which is committed to building resilience and promoting awareness of mental health and well-being within schools, community organisations and businesses. It was the firm's intention to have only one winner, but decided that Montrose Tennis Club should also be recognised for its inspiring initiative to provide free tennis sessions for children with disabilities or additional support needs. The funding will allow them to build on the success of last year's six-week programme, which supported 20 children at Lochside Primary and 12 at Montrose Academy. The scheme has already made a significant impact, and the club has been asked by both participating schools to rerun the programme this year. Club coach Graham Walker said the children who take part really benefit from these activities and it's rewarding to see their skills improve from throwing and catching to getting balls over the net and progressing into rallying with partners, which is a fantastic skill to have as it brings so much enjoyment to playing tennis. Gail Penman, New Solutions CIC Director, added, "We are so grateful to Crawford Architecture for the support. It gives us a fantastic opportunity to pilot our Taskmaster programme, enabling us to reach children who may otherwise struggle to engage and giving the tools they need to thrive, both socially and academically." Bus fares in Angus are due to go up later this month, Stagecoach East Scotland has said. The change will apply from Sunday, April 27th, covering services across Angus, Dundee, Fife and Perth and Kinross, as well as routes into Aberdeen, Edinburgh and Glasgow. The bus operator has said that revenue from fares is vital for covering the daily expenses of running services, including inflationary pressures on fuel and maintenance costs, which are increasing the cost of operations. It also enables continued investment in staff, vehicles, technology and customer service, as well as to cover additional costs, such as employer national insurance contribution increases. Sarah Elliott, Commercial Director, said, "Bus travel remains great value for money, and our ticket prices provide an affordable and sustainable option for customers. Stagecoach has consistently delivered some of the lowest ticket prices in the UK, and we are committed to keeping fares as low as possible for our customers." By March 2026, Stagecoach will have added an additional 500 electric buses to its fleet across the UK, bringing the total to 1,083 zero-emission buses, with 46 new electric vehicles being introduced in East Scotland later in 2025, following investment in 26 new buses already introduced to the fleet in the last 4 months. The company is also investing in a more user-friendly app and website, enabling customers to buy digital single and return tickets in advance.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride. My choice today for a chat with you all is Dolly Parton. Now, if you're one of the very few people on planet Earth who hasn't heard of Dolly, then please keep listening, because this chat, in the time I have, rather than being all about her endless multi-million selling musical songs, it's much more a focus in the time I have on the work, the philanthropy and the amazing effort that she has put into helping others through the money she has made from these world famous songs. Of course, we all know the poor background, born in Tennessee, the fourth child of a family of 12. Her own father couldn't read or write. Now, there's a link to some of her later work. But it was music, musical talent, that gave her self-confidence, which gave her a path into the fame through the Grand Old Opry, working with Porter Wagoner, and then going further afield, away from the idea of just appealing to country music fans, to become this internationally famous superstar. One of the aspects of Dolly, which I also want to say, is just how self-aware she is. As she famously said, "I don't get affected by dumb blonde jokes because, you know I'm not dumb. And I also know I'm not a blonde." So even from those early days, Dolly was a woman of wisdom and a woman of great mirth, in fact. "I'm a self-made woman," says Dolly, "and I have the doctor bills to prove it." Now, those early successes and the continuing success over decades has given her the money and also the platform to use that money. Some particular themes arise. She wants to help children. Now, you can throw money at things or you can think about it. I think she's always been a very astute woman, and the dream was channel the money towards projects or people where it would be most useful. So many years ago, when she saw the success and she saw the money coming in, she set up the Dollywood Foundation. Now, this is a non-profit organisation which in itself is providing hundreds of jobs, because, of course, the bids come in from projects all over America, and indeed it's become sought after money from all over the world. They look at the bids, they consider where the money should go, and then it goes out. In particular, she's trying to check that money goes towards education, She has a very strong scholarship program all across America and an innovative idea called the Buddy Program, where kids are put forward for this money, but they go in pairs. And the idea is you have one student who is really quite keen to do well in the exams that are coming up, and they are paired with someone who's maybe a bit more of a reluctant learner. And she's very basic about it. What will make them work harder? It's money. But the deal is they both have to graduate. So a bit of peer pressure used in a very positive way, and it's been very, very successful, especially across the less wealthy parts of America. She's very focused on nature conservation, and in the recent dreadful wildfires in Tennessee, set up My People Fund, trying to restore the homes, restore the habitats, and restore the livelihoods of the people in our home state. A fun aspect of helping people in your home state is the Dollywood theme park. Well, of course it is. People want to go along and have fun. So there you are, a theme park for all the family, bringing money into a very poor area of the United States, and above all, bringing employment at all areas for people in that part that she loves so much. A central core of this work is her giant, profound belief in literacy. As Dolly said, you can never get enough books into the hands of enough children. She doesn't just say that. From 1995, she has ploughed money into the Imagination Library, sending out books first in her local state, then across America, and that has now become a worldwide program of giving books to families and especially to children. Considering that her own father could not read or write, that's clearly a wish that she has had really from her very earliest days. It's estimated now that in her work through the Imagination Library, they have distributed over 100 million books across the world. These figures are staggering. They send out over 1 million books every month to improve literacy of all children who are attending school. And a vital aspect of that, which I'm very happy to mention, of course, is that the books are now being done on Braille, so that visually impaired and blind children can access the world of imagination, which Dolly seeks to broaden out to as many young kids as possible. Time for another Dollyism, I think. What about this one? I was the first woman to burn my bra. It took the fire department 4 days to put it out. Now, the Dolly shape. Well, curvy, I think, would be an understatement. But that, in fact, led to a very strong Scottish connection that I have to mention. Because when Professor Ian Wilmot and the team at Roslin were doing experimentation on sheep, they finally managed to craft a cloned sheep. And they decided to give this world-breaking first a special name. And that became the most famous sheep in the world, Dolly the Sheep. Now, I don't think Dolly herself was at all offended by being given this title. And she knew that Dolly was a very famous and a very important sheep. But I think Professor Ian Wilmot was a bit concerned he had upset her. And he issued a statement saying, you know, it wasn't meant to be disrespectful to the lady in question or to the women of the world in general. The name really helped humanise a research project. I think it was good for us. It made us look human. And you know, in that spirit, I'm sure she appreciated having that name attached to such an important scientific project. "You'd be surprised," said Dolly, "how much it costs to look this cheap." This is a woman who doesn't mind people knowing that she's had her fair bit of surgery done. And of course, the wigs, how famous are the wigs? Sometimes she's asked, "You know, how long does it take to do your hair?" But she wisely says, "Well, I don't know, because I'm never there." And the wigs are not only the glamour aspect of her stage appearances. I didn't know this until I was studying for my chat today. They serve a very practical purpose, because when she's on stage wearing her sparkly figure-hugging outfits, her wig is where they put the microphone, which merely makes it very practical as well as very attractive. A few things just to close about Dolly, who I've really just given you an insight, a very little insight into, is the fact that she always loves food. In fact, she says, "My weaknesses have always been food and men, in that order." She doesn't only proclaim her love for food, she even specifies her favourite food. Now you might think this is a multimillionaire woman who could order anything exotic, frankly, from anywhere in the world. But no, Dolly's favourite food is potatoes. "Every diet," says Dolly, "every diet I ever fell off has been because of a potato. I just love potatoes. Baked potatoes, mashed potatoes, or French fries. I couldn't go without them." Oh, makes her feel so real and makes her seem really very wise. The ultimate accolade is from the people of her own area, who revere her as a preserver of their land, as an innovator in bringing employment to the area, and now have given her a statue in Tennessee, where she's sitting a little bit like the Little Mermaid on the rock in Copenhagen Harbour. It shows her as a young barefoot singer holding her guitar and smiling. And the words they would like to give to Dolly is maybe, I hope you will agree, very well merited. The Queen of the Appalachia. And I'll just finish with her favourite recipe. We're back to food again, folks. Now, if you're inclined to try this recipe and you decide it's not for you, please don't complain about me. I'm passing on another Dollyism. "My favourite food," says Dolly, "is always macaroni cheese with fried apples." I must confess, I haven't tried it yet. So if I'm not doing very much over the next few weeks, I'll try the Dolly special recipe. Thanks once again. Oh, and by the way, listen to the music as well, because it's fabulous. Thanks so much.
TNF Soundings. TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This time we're chatting about hobbies and pastimes with sight loss. We'd like to introduce James Colton, who was very active and sporty before he was registered severely sight impaired in 2003.
So James takes us through his hobbies before he lost his sight, and then he tells us what hobbies he has now.
Before my sight went, I used to do surfing and snorkeling and water sports and things like that, and camping. When I could drive, we used to drive down to Anglesey or down to Cornwall, do a bit of camping and surfing. If there was no way for surfing, we used to do snorkeling. Just used to go, you know, walking about different places. I used to do quite a bit of photography, days of film, you know, before we went digital. Sort of fell out of bit of that before my sight went. And I used to really enjoy driving, get in the car and just go for a drive. Since my sight went, the big thing was the driving. I wasn't able to do any driving or anything like that. So that then had an impact on me being able to do the other things like the camping and the surfing that I used to enjoy doing. Obviously, I couldn't drive, so I couldn't get to these places. So yeah, that was the big thing that I had to put up with. And then after about 12 months or so, and digital cameras started coming out, I had a look at a digital camera and I thought whether I can use the digital camera. And at the time, it was just when what they called live view was coming out, where you could use the screen on the back of the camera as a viewfinder. And that was a big turning point for me, because I was able to use a handheld magnifier over the back of the screen and be able to take up photography again, which was something I enjoyed doing. But since my sight's gone, they enabled me to see the world in a different way. Because when I go out places, I mean, I love going out walking and I still do. When I'm outside, I can't really see the countryside and things like that when I'm walking. I can see big objects and I can tell there's a mountain, or I can tell there's something there, but I can't see any details. So if I point the camera in the right way, take some photographs, and then when I get home, I can have a look on the computer screen or the TV, and I'll be able to see all the details that I missed when I was out there walking. So, for example, I might have been able to see there was a big mountain or a hill in front of me, but I wouldn't have been able to see, for example, a waterfall with a little footbridge by the waterfall and things like that. So when I got home, I was able to see all these different bits and pieces and the colours that I would have missed when I was actually there. Digital cameras made a massive difference to how I saw the world. I started coming round a bit, probably 12 months or so after I lost my sight, started doing a few more things, got around people that were in a similar position, got talking to them, then started realising there was things I could still do. So I started canoeing and kayaking on lakes when I went away places, which is something I didn't get the chance to do before my sight went. I recently got into paddleboarding and I've now a paddle sport leader's qualification. So that enables me to take small groups of people out in canoes, kayaks, paddleboards on sheltered waters, so like canals and things like that. I do go on the canals occasionally on my own, on my paddleboard. Most of the time, my wife comes with me and walks down the canal towpath. And she's able just to point out if there's anybody fishing, just for me to be aware of. I can tell if there's a barge coming towards me or nearby, because I can usually hear the barges. But it's fishermen that tend to hide away at the side of the bank really quiet. And if it wasn't for my wife, you know, I might get in their way a little bit. So it's good that she can walk down the towpath as well. So that's canoeing, kayaking, paddleboarding that I've been able to carry on doing. And then last year, for the first time in about 20 years or so, with British Blind Sports, they put a taster session of surfing over at Scarborough. So I thought, oh, I'll have a do at that. I've not done that for 20 years. I wonder if I can still do it. So went over to Scarborough. They had all the kit and everything. They had some instructors there and some volunteers. The first wave, I was able to get up, stand up and ride it in. And it was just like everything came straight back and it was massive, you know, really good adrenaline rush. I could have been out there all day, enjoyed it that much. So I was able to do surfing for the first time in years. Something else I got into since my sight went, again, I never had the chance to do it before, was climbing. I've really got into indoor climbing. I've taken some qualifications, the NICAS. I've got NICAS Level 3, which is National Indoor Climbing Award Scheme. And then that enabled me to go even further. And I ended up taking a Indoor Climbing Assistant qualification. So I'm now a qualified Indoor Climbing Assistant. And I'm working towards Indoor Climbing Instructor, which we're just looking out to see what sort of reasonable adjustments the governing bodies will allow me to do for me to get a indoor climbing instructors. So it's something I really enjoy doing for myself. And I've even taken my two young grandkids, who are now 7 and 11. I've taken them to the climbing wall a few times. I've taken my sister-in-law as well. So I've got a few people into climbing. So it's something that even though I've lost my sight, I'm able to take my grandkids climbing with me and instruct them on what they need to do to climb. My granddaughter's taken to it. She's quite a good little climber. My grandson, he's a brilliant climber, but he's scared of coming down. So we just need to build his confidence on coming down. And it's something great that I can do and be part of the grandkids' lives. So, yeah, it just shows that there are a lot of hobbies, activities and things that you can do, even if you've lost your sight. You may have to do them in a slightly different way. The only thing that I found that I can't do is the driving. But having said that, there are ways that you can drive on a racetrack or something like that. There are certain organisations that will enable you to take up driving on a track, something we can't do on the public roads, unfortunately, but I'm still able to drive. Once or twice a year, I'll have a go at driving around a racetrack. And again, that is just like riding a bike. It comes straight back to you. When you've got somebody alongside to help with the vision, doing the gears, the brakes, the accelerator, everything like that, it all just comes flooding back to you. So really enjoy doing that every year. If I can do it, I think anybody else can do it. If there's something that you think that you're missing out on when you've lost your sight, have a word with other people's organisations out there, and I'm sure there'll be some way of somebody helping you to carry on doing what you enjoy doing, living the best life you can.
James has made a great effort to live the best life with the usable sight that he has left, and it goes to show that even with sight loss, it's possible to have a range of hobbies that make you smile.
So let's have a look at some other hobbies. Sometimes it may be possible to adapt an existing hobby, or it might be that starting a completely new hobby might be fun. Many hobbies emphasise senses other than sight, like touch, smell and sound.
Recording audio can be great fun, whether it's recording a story, your memories or even a shopping list. It's so easy to do if you have a smartphone or voice recorder. Listening to audio, whether it's music, books or podcasts, can be a great pastime, which is entertaining and educational too.
Making music, whether playing an instrument or being in a choir, can still be possible after sight loss. Braille music scores are available, and learning songs using Braille or by ear are other options.
Music and singing has been proven to release endorphins, which is a pleasure hormone. I get great pleasure out of singing, but not many people get pleasure out of listening to me. Even a dog puts the paws over its ears.
I'm not surprised. Going to music concerts and musicals can be great entertainment too. Some theatres provide audio-described performances where a verbal commentary describes the setting, costumes, characters, facial expressions, body language and actions. This is usually done by listening on a headset or with an earpiece.
How about getting involved with the performing arts as well? Searching out opportunities for poetry reading, acting, comedy, songwriting, playwriting and public speaking.
Participating in dance classes or social dances, feeling the rhythm and the movement can be beneficial.
If you enjoy creative hobbies, using your hands, tactile activities such as pottery, painting, knitting and crochet, gardening and cooking can be done alone or as a group.
We spoke to Linda Rimmer, who took up knitting after a stroke took her sight.
I've been out in the car in the day and I come home with children from school. We sit down after tea and put the 6 o'clock news on. And I just said to Jim, why is the telly black? All I could see was a black screen. Like, you look at it now, it's not switched on. Next thing you caught on, took me to the hospital, went to see a specialist there and confirmed that I'd lost my sight. Somebody invited me to go to Charnley Fold at Bamber Bridge. Got introduced to meeting people that were doing different crafts, and they said, oh, we've got a knitting group. And there used to be about 10 or 12 people there, ladies of all age groups, all knitting various bits and pieces, jumpers and what have you. There was different ladies showing you how to do this and how to do that. And I said, well, I've never knit before, what can I knit? And they gave me a ball of wool and some needles, and they showed me how to cast on. And they said, oh, just do what we call blanket squares. And there was 40 stitches and then 40 rows. And they kept all these squares, and after so many weeks, they knit them all together and made blankets for old age pensioners. I'm making snowmen, and you hang them on your Christmas tree. I have a row marker there, so when I do 40 rows. I keep turning me down till I've done the 40, then I know it's time to cast off. I count stitches and then I end up making a tube like that. I can count along the rows, and then when I know I've done the amount of stitches, I know when to fasten it off at the top, and then that will get filled with polyester fibre, and then that will make the body shape. And then you tie around to make the head shape. I can feel where my wool is there. And then I go on to doing a hat and a scarf. And it's a stripy hat with whatever shades of wool I've got. And then I do a scarf. I knit all year round till about October, November. And I just box them all up, then book a table. I've always supported Derry In-House Children's Hospice. So we have used supermarkets, put the stall up for Derry In-House, and I borrow a banner from Derry In-House. And we take a picnic table and we line them all up. And as customers come through the door, they can see these little snowmen, and there's a sign saying it's for Derry In-House. And people just donate, well, I'll have one and I'll have two and this sort of things, and just love doing them.
What an amazing lady Linda is. From being diagnosed as severely visually impaired to learning to knit and then using her new skill to help raise money for her local children's hospice.
Yes, she is, and it was lovely to chat to her. Engaging in hobbies such as strategy games and memory games is an excellent way to stay mentally sharp. Many games are adapted to be tactile, such as chess, dominoes and Scrabble. Large print and braille playing cards are available too, and large print crossword puzzles and Sudoku can be found online or be bought.
Other hobbies that keep you mentally active can include learning braille or moon type. Or what about learning another language? This can be done audibly or with braille. Maybe an online course might suit your needs to advance your education or just for fun.
Being out and about amongst nature offers a wealth of sensory experiences. Listening to the sounds and smells of the countryside, the feel of the wind, the sun and even the rain can be very uplifting.
How about listening to birdsong, either at home or when you're out and about, and identifying them? You could keep an audible log of what birds you have heard.
Hobbies allow everyone to learn, grow and enjoy life. Creating a community around your hobbies can be very rewarding. Connecting with others who share your interests provides not only companionship, but also motivation and encouragement.
Look out for local clubs, online forums, or social media groups dedicated to your favourite activities. Engaging with these communities can offer support, share resources, and foster friendships. A support network enhances the enjoyment and fulfillment you get from your hobbies.
Hobbies can serve as a powerful tool for mindfulness and relaxation, and as an escape from daily stresses.
We hope we have given you an insight into some of the hobbies you can pursue.
We'd like to thank James and Linda for sharing their stories with us, and wish them both well in all that they do.
You've been listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. We'd like to wish you all the very best and ask you to take care. So until the next time, it's goodbye from the both of us.
TNF Soundings.